I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the capital city. It's a long, long wait while I'm sitting in committee. But I know I'll be a law someday. At least I hope and pray that I will. But today I am still just a bill. I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I got as far as capital.
You're listening to KDWA AM 1460, FM 97.7, and this is Community In Depth. I'm your host for this segment, Mike Rood, and I have on the phone with me State Senator for District 54, Carla Bigham. Senator Bigham, it's good to have you back again.
Oh, thanks for having me, Mike.
You're very welcome. We're into week six for the legislative session for 2021, and things are starting to become a little bit more active in the Capitol House as bills begin to move and committees begin to meet. I would like to start with the statement or the presentation that Governor Walz made on Friday regarding restrictions for dining facilities and other businesses. Can you go over that a little bit for us?
Sure, absolutely. Well, I'm excited about this because I've been in conversations with his staff about especially, you know, wedding venues and reception halls. Both counties, cities have event centers. And, of course, I'm a June bride, and those weddings are coming up. And so you got to kind of have some direction. So I appreciate that the governor's kind of released some of this information in concert with the hospitality industry and the event center industry. So first and foremost, I'm going to let people know restaurants can stay open until 11 p.m. now, restaurants and bars, so you get an extra hour. That's exciting. Gym capacity is to 250, and they reduce the distancing requirement to 6 feet. So those, Jeff Tate's CrossFit gym down there, he'll be excited about that.
Right.
And then... the private events and celebrations will increase to 50 people. Right now it's currently 10. It goes to 50 and leaving the maximum capacity at 25%. So we're getting there. I mean, I know that's still not as much as what people want, but it's a significant jump to where we were. And then indoor entertainment can be 250 while not while still at that 25% capacity, and then the restaurants can increase to 250, leaving the maximum capacity at 50%. And so you're increasing the number of total number of people because the square footage obviously would allow for that if you're looking at your 50%. I know that's probably not articulate, but it's a good thing. People are getting an extra hour to be out there. But I'm going to say this, be safe.
Right.
Be safe. Mask
yep.
up, sanitize, get tested, because if we get an outbreak, this is going to go right back to where we started, folks. And we got all these variants out there that we don't know what the heck that's going to do. And so we got to continue to be vigilant and safe. Still, we need to continue to safely open up for workers and for consumers.
Right.
So we gotta make sure that we're gonna do this in a safe manner, and I believe this is, man, our numbers, you know, for the 7-day and 14-day totals have been trending extremely well in the right direction. Fewer frontline workers are calling in sick because they've got the vaccine, but that is not a that's not a sign or a signal to just open the door and go back to pre-COVID. We still have a lot of room to improve and to really get control of this virus in a manner, and that starts with the vaccines. You know, it's just been a tragedy that we haven't had a federal plan, and President Biden in his first weeks here has been, kind of really ramping up the amount of doses that each state is going to get. And
okay.
that they're going, instead of, real quick, just for your listeners, right now the Fed sends to Minnesota the doses, either the two approved vaccines to like regional hubs, Mike. And then those hubs spoke out to, you know, either the community centers, the community vaccine sites or pharmacies or providers. Well, now we're going to stop that. A lot of them aren't going to be going to that hub anymore. They're going to go direct. The pharmacies and to the providers, and that'll cut down on travel time.
Sure.
So
that's
what we got to keep doing.
Do we dare call this then maybe seeing the light at the end of the tunnel? I know you said we don't throw the doors wide open, but the light.
No, we don't. Until we get about 80% herd immunity, which means you got shots in the arms of people that's of the vaccine, that you then can probably, you know, see that you won't, it'll be completely open. But, you know, there's going to be people that just will not take the vaccine.
Right.
And so we just got to get there and continue to be safe and be respectful of not only ourselves from spreading something and protecting ourselves, but protecting others that may do this. So this is a step in the right direction. And it's not an easy spot for anybody to be in. I don't envy the governor, the president, business owners, none of, because this has been so hard.
Mm-hmm.
And we celebrate the frontline workers and the small businesses that really have had to fight through this as well. And we remember those that were a casualty of the virus, and those are, we can't just be flippant about the tragedy that this virus has instilled in our state, in our country, and in the world.
Exactly. Another nice indicator of that whole light at the end of the tunnel. I know one of the local senior facilities here in Hastings has started allowing in-person visits. You know, they're tightly restricted and very closely watched, but families are being able to be, they're being able to go back into these facilities and visit their shut-in relatives and the elderly, and that's a good thing.
Absolutely. I mean, our seniors, our most vulnerable folks, it's devastating. There is no simple way to say it. And whether it's nationally or locally, there's been, you know, just an emphasis on trying to keep them safe and trying to get them vaccinated and their staff and get them to be able to be with family and friends. Now, my parents, I'm not going to tell you their age, but, you know, one is turning, I'll say this, happy birthday, Dad. He turned 71 this past weekend here on Valentine's Day.
There you go.
But my parents are still, you know, they're on the waiting list. And, you know, my mother-in-law is elderly. And, you know, you just have to be so careful. And no mm-hmm. one is going to have a group gathering with any of them until they get the vaccine. I mean, it's just, and I can't imagine being in a situation where my loved one is in a long-term care facility. It is heart-wrenching.
It really is. And my own parents, they live up on the Iron Range. They have they have self-sequestered. They don't go out. Well, my stepdad does to do necessary work, but my mom hasn't left the house probably since last July.
Wow.
Yeah. And they're wanting to get out there, getting a little bit of cabin fever, and I haven't been able to visit them. So it'd be nice to get up there and do that once the light at the end of the tunnel gets a little bit brighter. moving on at this point, I would like to talk about another issue that has been fairly consistent since like 2017 in our area, and that's the perfluoral alkyls.
That you're brave to try and pronounce it. I don't even do that, Mike. Wow.
It's just the PFAS that people have been learning about in the water in Cottage Grove a few years ago, and it's kind of spreading out throughout the county. They're starting up, I believe, a new monitoring commission or a new group of people to help deal with that whole issue. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, so this week the MPCA announced a blueprint for PFAS, and what that's going to do is it puts together a group of legislation that is meant to not only clean up the existing known contamination, but prevention, and then of it coming into our system, and research, further additional research. And so I'm championing a few of the bills, you know, related to designating PFAS as a hazardous material. And we would do that because the requirements to dispose of it are different when it's designated as a hazardous material.
Right.
And transporting it is different, you know, obviously, than when it's a hazardous material. And so we need to ensure that we are disposing of this product in the correct way. And by the way, they're not even supposed to really be making the product. And what's happening, when I mean they, it's 3M, and but they're just changing some of the quick chemicals on it, and it's very PFAS-like, but it's not technically PFAS. And so they're just trying to get around it. But then, you know, there's issues with making sure we have research for long-term effects to the long-term exposure of this product. That's a very big concern of mine, and I know Representative Frankie, who's a Republican, we're both townies. You know, we've lived here, we've drank this water, mm-hmm. Our whole lives, we still do.
Right.
And so, you know, we have family and communities, friends, businesses that want answers on this. And we quite honestly need to keep doing more on that. And then additionally, to get it out of the system, or to prevent it from coming in the system, we want to know proper labeling of products that would have it. And then we also don't want to allow it in food packaging.
Right.
Microwave popcorn it has PFAS in the wrapper.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really shouldn't knowingly be contaminating this with the food, right?
And you would think so, yeah.
You would think so, right? And so we don't want that exposure. And so we don't want the food packaging to have PFAS in it. So these are some of the things that we want to do. But we'll also have a concerted one or two people that are going to be tracking this blueprint and how we can do this. The time has come and gone, actually. It should have been done a long time ago, addressing these issues. And it's gotten tied up because, to be fair, there's obstruction from litigation. There's obstruction from just not wanting to comply with it. 3M is currently under investigation for some discharge violations. That was in the Star Tribune a little over a month ago.
Didn't they self-report that, though?
They
did, yeah. But still, the investigation is there.
Right, and something will come of that. And so, I mean, so there's just a lot of these things that have happened. I am proud of the legislation that we have done through my tenure, either as a city council member or as a state representative, and now as a senator, regarding biomonitoring, health risk values of these chemicals, and really just keeping the eye on the prize of getting this chemical out of our system, not being used, and learning more about it. Whether, you know, what is it in wildlife? What is it in fish? I mean, they've found this chemical in polar bears in the Arctic. This is a forever chemical.
Sure.
And so we have a lot more work to do, and we got to dedicate resources towards it. And we know that the settlement of $850 million from 3M a few years ago now, isn't going to be enough to fully remediate this for the life of the chemical. So we've got a lot of work ahead of us and some heavy lifting to do, but this is the right thing to do, and it's really a bipartisan effort.
Okay, and I believe also that there are going to be meetings and sessions with the general public regarding this. Are you aware of any of that schedule yet?
I am not aware of the schedule, but you know, I'll get that out when I am made aware of the dates.
Okay.
As always, people can submit any comments, questions, concerns to the MPCA. And if you go on their website, there's ability to do that. And I believe that they have launched and put on the website the blueprint for this.
All right, and we'll have links to that on KDWA also, KDWA.com on our news page there. The one other thing I'd like to talk about, and we've got about 3 minutes left, is it needs more than 3 minutes, but that's all we have at this point, is legislation that kind of restructures local government aid in Minnesota.
Oh, yeah.
What's going on there?
Well, it's nothing more than a partisan swipe, and it's an attack on local government aid, and that state aid to cities like Hastings. Hastings gets millions of dollars of local government aid that's dedicated to police, fire, public works, and really just to keep the community going. And what's being targeted is if you have a mutual aid agreement and you fail to pay a bill, you can... those communities can come after your local government aid. Well, you are disrupting a budget that is, especially in Hastings, that is very dependent on local government aid. If you don't have local government aid, your property taxes are going to go up. And so when Mayor Mary and the team pass a budget, then it's assured that that money is going to be there. You put this into law, and one of the surrounding communities that has a mutual aid agreement with Hastings decides to say, hey, we want this money because of this bill, that money's going to come directly out of the city's budget that's already been proposed. So the only other thing they can do is raise property taxes to deal with it. You're going to drive wedges into communities in rural Minnesota because they overwhelmingly depend on local government aid. It is just, I don't even know where to begin with how asinine I think the proposal is, and this week I'll be making that very clear.
Sure, and does the legislation say that a community would be required to do that with another community, or would the decision to pursue those funds be left up to an individual community?
Oh, I mean, yeah, so like Cottage Grove would have to say to Hastings, I'm filing this form because you're not paying with the state because you're not paying this unpaid bill. And by the way, the state's now going to claw back your local government aid.
Oh, okay, sure.
And so, I mean, and we can talk about it more next week, but it's a very divisive and divisive piece of legislation.
All right, and we will put that on the slate for next week. At this point, we do need to kind of wrap it up here. So I would once again like to give you the opportunity to provide your contact information for constituents who have questions or concerns.
Absolutely. The easiest way to get a hold of me is 651-297-8060, or you can send an email at SEN, which is the abbreviation for Senator, .Carla, and remember that's with a K, .Bigham@senate.mn.
Excellent. Senator Carla Bigham has been my guest for this segment of Community In-Depth. Senator, thank you for your time.
Thank you, and stay warm out there.
We'll do our best. You are listening to Community In-Depth on KDWA, AM 1460, FM 97.7.
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill.
He signed your bill. Now you're a law.
Oh, yes.